Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run. It's Thursday.
Yebo! Tomorrow is Friday! Good. I'm already tired for tomorrow.
No, we don't have time to be, to be tired. That's not how you motivate your listeners, dude. All right, let's start that over again. Good afternoon. Welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. As always, we're here from Monday to Friday, 4:30 to 6, bringing you all the updates that, in the words of yours truly, Dwight, that you did not know you needed to hear until you do. Today's topic is my favorite out of all the topics we have had in 2025. Maybe another topic is going to come up in the near future. That is as in as we head towards the end of the year. Maybe another exciting topic is going to come up that is going to just get me, skittle my way to the studio, so that I can just sit here and talk about it. That's because today's topic is based on a report coming out of the United Nations. But the topic is the most African. I would argue that is the most African oriented topic that is one of, if not the most African oriented topic we have ever had. One of, if not the most. I think that's the safe English to use. Now, the reason behind is that it speaks to the community. When you look at developmental goals, whether you're looking at them from a national or global level, they all speak to one thing. How do you deliver, products or services to the people that need them the best? That also speaks a lot to, more like describes a lot of school of thoughts of basically everything that we have come up with as a species, whether you're looking at it from politics, philosophy, economics. Take economics, for example. The reason why, terms like trickle-down economics is a thing is because the goal is how do you trickle down that, overall benefits of pretty much everything. How do you filter it down, or more like ascend it down all the way to the roots, to the people that need it the most, public and private, but let's just stick to the public. Private is more profit driven, and that's thanks to, Ford and Dodge Brothers case of 1909. Basically, is it 1909 and 1919? One of those years, so that case basically doomed capitalism one way, like really doomed the system. Now, today's discussion is about, what the community can do, or what can be done on a community level, not what the community can do per se, but what can be done on a community level, coordinating efforts on a community level. Because when it comes to solving problems both on a national and a global level, looking at it from a national level. Every time that we talk about a problem, every time that we complain about something, whether it's this just a genuine complaint or it's just one of those things where you have too much airtime and, your hour is expiring the next day, now you just have to use up your airtime. Now, just looking at it from the angle of, complaining, more like, airing your grievances on, especially on air, about something that you don't agree that it's working out for the better in your society. We often say it's not working out for the regular person. Everything that's drawn, or more like every system we come up with, the question that it has to answer is, how does this benefit the regular Helmut on the ground? From the United Nations SDGs, NDP6, Arab Prosperity, all this, the bottom line is, it must trickle down all the way, to borrow that economic term. How is it benefiting the regular person on the ground? Because that's where it becomes a problem. You can come up with any program that you would like to implement as someone that's involved in the central governance way of doing things. But the biggest question is, every time that you go on the ground, it's more often people saying, no, well, this, this project did not reach me. This initiative did not reach me. Now, So that now, when you look at it, that's very counter, you know, society. I know that we, you know, I'm saying counter society because when it comes to, you know, when it comes to solving problem, we believe that it's better solved to, you know, to the benefits of the people on the ground. So, and we even come up with the what's the way of describing things? The people on the ground. Now, the report I'm talking about, which is taking us straight to Ubuntu, not to be confused with Pan-Africanism, because, you know, Ubuntu is, Ubuntu is highly emphasized. But the thing is, the community-based social protection in Africa, community-based social protection. In other words, whether it's security, medicine, or anything, we're now looking at it from not from the central government standpoint solely, although not from solely from the central government or solely from developmental partners or, you know, NGOs that are associated with those initiatives, but also how can, you know, what role at least does the common helmet on the ground, what role do they play? Do they have to play? Dwight?
Helmut, please never call yourself the common Helmut, please.
What am I going with?
Just say a person like Helmut. No, I'm not here to correct your English on that. Okay. It just sounded Thank weird you. That there are that there are multiple Helmuts. There could be the most valuable Helmut and the everyday ordinary Helmut.
Look, man, there's we have one of our colleagues.
Yeah,
one of our colleagues.
That did what? What did the colleague do?
That called me one day on my phone. I pick up and he's like, oh, sorry, I thought I was talking to Helmut Angula. I was like, oh, seriously, man?
Hence, he called you.
Yeah.
So you are the, okay, so that's why you make reference to the ordinary, common Helmut.
You're welcome. Well, we just laughed it out because I was like, hang on a second. First of all, man, the examples I have will get us fired.
look. How far do we still have to go? Today's the 10th.
Ubuntu.
Let's do 20 more days, you know? 20 more days.
Bottom line is the day is coming. Yeah.
Hey, but next week is once again your favorite collective of, but that's only next week. That's not even this week.
Yeah, that's next week.
Yeah, that's next week. Next week's issues.
So, Ubuntu.
Mm.
It turns out, today's topic is very Ubuntu-oriented. Although, if you look at it in terms of, solving problems as a society. Now, in my very elaborate, it wasn't until I basically went through more like the historical part of this report, which is one that, I found fascinating the most in terms of problem solving in society. In one of the podcasts, Trevor Noah makes the argument that, the thing about, modern society setup is that,
Wait. A guy that went to a private school, lived in the nice parts of Johannesburg, worked in the United States.
Yeah.
He's going to be telling you and me about Ubuntu.
He didn't talk about Ubuntu. Not mentioning the word Ubuntu, but, the description of what he's trying to talk about can easily be, interpreted to mean basically that.
Mm.
The thing is, now, this is something that now I found, I found fascinating that, when it comes to governance, the UN does not really specify which form of governance a country must adopt as long as it gets the people involved as much as possible in how they are governed. So it does not strictly, I know we sing about democracy a lot, but the UN just emphasizes, you can call it whatever you want. Are the people involved?
Mm.
That's all they care about, which I found very, which I found fascinating, which is why I went again to the, because I've heard the definition of democracy a lot, government of the people for the people. But now the speech where that phrase comes from does not mention the word democracy.
Mm.
Now, so that makes it shows me just how creative we have become when it comes to gluing all these things together. But When it comes to the report that we're talking about today, you know, is coming from the UNDP, United Nations Development Programs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's based on a community-based social protection. Yeah. And this is on the historical part, it takes us, it turns out there are various reports, right, on, community-based social protection for Asia, Europe, and all that. Because we're in Africa, we're just looking at the African one. Now, the report does dive into, the historical aspects of community-based problem solving, whether it's hunger, safety, hunger, safety, and security, and medicinal, oriented services. It was all community-based before we came to this whole, central forms of governance where you have a lot of things centralized from agriculture. You have ministry for everything. With some, ministry of loneliness, some during COVID-19 pandemic. That's in Asia, not in Namibia, don't worry.
Okay. Yeah. I was about to ask questions now.
Yeah, I know.
Did you come up with this idea just now in the spur of the moment?
No, I didn't. Okay. I had to read it like 1,000 times for me to believe it. But now, the thing is, by looking at the history of why the whole community-based problem solving must be discussed, the report dives into the history of the whole concept, which I think is very important, because it highlights that it's not something that's new. It's something that we are slowly losing because of all the urbanization and stuff, and all, more like an individualistic point of view in terms of how we choose to live our lives these days, because life is very expensive for a hostel these days. And
I'll wait for finish your point.
So then they go on to point out that because this is not something new, it shouldn't be that hard to sort of like, revive it, right? Like on an African level. Mm. Now, back to my Trevor Noah example. Mm. The point that the point he was making was that modern life is somewhat is more motivating you to focus on yourself, and basically everything else is secondary, yeah. Which is basically every aspect of human life. Where I'm one of those people that argues that we're just naturally selfish. There are those ones that are very good at containing their selfishness, and there are people that are just terrible at it. Yeah. Now, the point Trevor Noah makes is that society today is, everything that we do, especially mostly how the economic system is set up, is set up in a way that it's very individualistic. It emphasizes individualism more than it does communities. Now, the point is, after you get to the, to achieve a certain dreams, the certain dreams of yours, maybe you have this fancy house and all these fancy cars, which is, you have people that are, praying for cars with the, rooms.
You remember, you know of the meme where the guy is coming standing with Jesus in his kitchen, telling Jesus, and Jesus asks him, "Are you sure you will not go crazy with just 3 million?
You'll behave."
And then he asks, "You'll behave?" And he says, yes.
I promise my Lord.
Give on. That's the kind of prayers that are supposedly going about.
But
the fundamental question, Ahmed, is where do you get the 3 million?
Oh, Robert Bank. The thing is, Trevano goes on to point, the thing is, this lifestyle, once it's you get some level of accomplishment in all this individualistic societal setup, you turn around and then you realize that you actually need society, because now you will have to pay for for pretty much everything around you.
Yeah.
You need a gardener, where your uncle would help you in one of those African based mutual relationship in terms of benefits, where your uncle would help you. Now you need a gardener, now you need a security guard, now you need a babysitter, now all these things you are paying for. In other words, you are paying for a society that you could, that for thousands of years was for free. I'm not saying get your relatives to do stuff for you for free.
Them just might fold you up and hang you on a hanger, somewhere, telling you go fly a kite somewhere.
Yeah, so the whole concept of society-based problem-solving method is not new. Basically, the whole concept of Ubuntu can be described just like that.
But it exists everywhere, Helmut.
Exactly.
Let me help you also with your example. Yeah. Namibia has had a plethora of these examples, and these examples still persist. And there is nothing wrong with urbanization, mm-hmm. but there is something wrong in terms of access to opportunities. I stress this point, Helmut. The access to opportunities is the issue, not the issue of urbanization. Yeah. The urbanization is an issue in Windhoek. But the urbanization would not be an issue for, let's say, an Okahania, a Rebos, a Ochevarongo, a Chobabas.
Huh?
It won't be.
Really?
Because all they are still like in infancy, the size, the scale of the town. Yeah. You know, they're like in infancy, so you can still properly plan things. Windhoek cannot. Windhoek, Helmut, is set. That's why you have the nice parts that people come and walk around and they tell you, ooh, look at that house. Ooh, look at that. And you're like, okay, it's just a house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a house. However,
that's how I comfort myself.
The templates, and these are the templates that feed into this Ubuntu discussion that this report tries to highlight. I say try to highlight because this report also bounces
through.
Yeah, it also bounces back to our conversation of yesterday. Because you need to be working from a base. And what is the base that you're working from? You're working from a society.
Mm-hmm.
And if the society was based upon a bunch of households that decided to start up a small settlement, or a bunch of family units that decided to come together to call it a community of some sort, you're building from that base. And obviously that base has just grown from strength to strength to strength. Now, the countries that they use as a template in this report, you've looked at them, ne?
Yeah.
Ghana, Sierra Leone, Liberia. My eyes are getting narrower. Rwanda, it opens up again because you can literally, you can walk from one side to the other side, one border to the other border. Yes, guys, you can do that. That's how big Rwanda is. And then the final one is Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
I'll also frown a little bit with Zimbabwe. Frown. But Zimbabwe is a Southern African template. You can also claim Rwanda to be a Southern African template.
Yeah.
Primarily because of their proximity to us, Southern Africa. And Rwanda's obviously being hailed as the modern African Switzerland, and I don't like it that they're called Switzerland. They don't have the same negative history through the financial sector of Switzerland, but they do have their own negative history. But the Rwanda today is Rwanda. When you speak about Rwanda, you just think of positives. That's all today. You can just think of positives. Now, Namibia can leverage to the same status, Helmut.
Yeah.
But the aim of this report is not to speak about, let's dial things back. Let's throw the handbook out.
We are not
about
going back
urbanization or industrialization.
Let's throw electricity and umbrella.
Yeah. No, that's not what this report states. Even though this report, lovely. Here's a sentence. I just want to set the tone into, because I had to like think five times. Is this what they're trying to say? Or is this what they are highlighting we should try to stick to? So it cites there. Community-based organizations, among other things, manage savings, extend loans and provide funeral insurance, offer emotional support and fill the cracks where formal systems fall short. In the words of a respondent that lives on the Liberia-Sierra Leone borderlands, quote unquote, when we have problems or issues, we go to the group for help. And always, they have not let us down, end of quote. But that first part of that statement I just read has a few holes that I'm now pointing out to. You see, the idea of insurance, Helmut, where does insurance come from? What is the term of insurance? And insurance in the modern day context is now a completely private sector initiative. Loans is a completely private sector initiative. Even though loans is an age old cash based interest money making system that came from the first instances of the loan sharks and money lenders guys, because it's
not. Did you say loan sharks?
Yeah. Back then they were loan sharks.
And today,
because they didn't have a central bank, they didn't have commercial banks. So I'm
so
talking
they
about
didn't have the right regulations.
So I'm literally talking about you going back as far back as ancient China, ancient the Europeans and the Romans and so forth, and the Greeks. You know, the first instances of money. Because those guys didn't have anything known as a bank. They didn't have the idea of a bank. The modern banking thing that we know today comes from what's those guys in Florence? The Medicis. The Medicis and the guys that come through here from Asia. They came from Asia, them as well. The idea of a bank. But still, the bank was still controlled by a state entity. The first independent banking scenario that you're thinking about obviously comes from the Italians, the Medicis themselves.
We got our financial Medicis, system from the Medicis, that's...
The Medicis and the Venetians, the guys from Venice.
Yeah.
They were also great trading, they were a great trading society.
Yeah, his bank bench.
Yeah. So when we're looking at the community-based support program, Helmut, the first thing I thought when I saw this report and I sent it to you and like, hey, look, let's look at this thing. I was thinking, oh, this is probably speaking about the actual social safety net situation. But then in this foreword signed off, this document signed off by the head of the United Nations Assistant Secretary General for the UNDP for Africa and the Commissioner for Health, Humanitarian Affairs and Social Development of the AU Commission. I was like, so you throw the words money lending and insurance into that sentence. Money lending, insurance, guys, you and I, we know in a Namibian context is, what you call it, a private sector initiative. Which then builds back, Helmut, to the discussion of the slight debate. Okay, I didn't have a debate. I don't argue with people because I'm not out there to convince you to change your mind on your perspective. I just educate people.
I like this report because I have to read about Ramadan.
But here's the thing. Remember when I cited the mutual acquaintance that you and I know, where I had the discussion with yesterday?
Yeah.
The perspective that this individual took was that, you know, firstly, she subscribes to the same notion of like some of the politicians like Malema and the other guys that want to do away with borders, who believe in this dystopian future that Africa should be cut off from the entire world and Africa must just chart its own particular course, which is a complete and utter fantasy of madness. I'll state that right now on air. It's madness. And the second scenario is that obviously the discussions around the education systems and access to opportunities and some of the particular language was about, you know, destroying everything and then rebuilding from it.
So now, Phoenix,
Phoenix, yeah, Phoenix obviously has a
Phoenix with, out of the ashes.
With resurrection situations. Yeah. But it's not the resurrection of an existing thing. This is a transformation from an ugly duckling to a swan.
One question I always ask is,
but the people have iPhones and the people have PCs and the people love their internets.
Let's just entertain the whole
And the
thing.
People wear Western clothes and they drive Yangos and they have taxi hailing services and they drive on tar roads. The discussion of decolonization that many people love throwing around is they want to go back to the donkey cart era. But then who's in charge of the donkey?
Okay, no.
Who's going to feed the donkey,
Helmut? No, forget the donkey.
Who's going to clean the street, Helmut, with donkeys?
You have two leaders on this continent right now that have been in office for over 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
They're still running for office come October. One of them come next year.
Oh, I know someone that's...
Which one of them...
I know that someone is currently now in Cameroon making jokes there from Cameroon. I hope she's not listening, but I hope she is listening. Apparently, at the ballot, at the voting station...
Uh-huh.
You get, like, if there are 13 parties with 13 candidates, you get 13 papers to make your selection at the voting booth.
How long is that election going to take?
I told her just to Dave, what are you telling me? That's madness. That is not making the thing easy for me as a voter. You're making it tedious and cumbersome for me.
No, look,
That's the homeboy that lives in...
Oh, dear Lord. Okay.
That doesn't even know he's head of state sometimes.
Yeah, Switzerland. Yeah. Now, look, the thing is, the question that is that always pops up in my head every time I try to picture the whole thing of just the break down the borders and unite Africa. Quick question: who's going to be the president? That's the first question you'll have to answer.
Who's going to look after police?
Because, knowing these guys,
knowing some of the other African countries,
each and every one of them will be organizing their, you know what, this whole M23 nonsense going on, where each leader is, you know, is funding a different militia to go and, on a regional proxy war.
Mm.
That's what you're looking at.
Mm.
Yeah.
But here's for power. But here's the thing. Okay. Ad break.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vindic beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar's crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vindic beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vindic, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back.
Oh, Helmut, make that statement now.
Okay, yeah.
So that our listeners can also laugh. Joy in the joyous revelation that brings the wisdom forward.
Look, man, as much as I want to see Africa united, first of all, this is the reason why I don't like to look at, to look at geopolitics as a Chinese versus black people, white people versus, versus black people or, or these people versus that thing. Because bottom line is geopolitics is about power.
Mm.
Bottom line, it's power.
Mm.
Nothing more, nothing less. The whole religious aspect or racial aspect is just a divide and conquer strategy, and it's as old time.
Yeah.
It's nothing new.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is whether someone is using religious, is using religion as a vehicle to push their idea, or is using racial division or whatever strategy that they involve, whether it's far right, far left, middle. The bottom line is it's about the acquisition of power. It all boils down to that. Once you understand that it's all about acquiring power, you are going to get in to get out of your head the whole nonsense of
it's the same politicians that speak about indigenous rights, but they want to open up borders to other Africans who are ready to just stand with that. What is that bag that comes out of Chinatown, that big bag where you just put in everything?
Oh.
That weird bad man that has the two little handles.
I know. The Hereros have a funny name for it. It's called My Rondopi, which means where is it going to climb, literally, in a car when you're transporting it?
Hey, these Namibians, now we've got jokes for this.
Namibians are brutal.
But you know that bag, ne?
Yeah, I know.
It sometimes also comes with multiple small colors on it.
Yeah.
Now, how many Africans do you think are ready to stand on the border like, yes, ready, set, go? Who's first? And then what?
Now, look, the thing is, all you just have to do is look at how many political parties you have per country. Now, break down the borders and add all those political parties and just imagine.
And who's going to be head of state? That's a lovely...
Who is going to be the president?
Yeah.
People are sitting in office for 40 plus years. Homeboy is... what? How old is he? 95? Cameroon, the president of Cameroon.
Paul Biya.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's still running.
Isn't it 93?
He's 90 something. He's still running for office. He's the world's oldest president.
Yeah.
Now, this is not because, you have to understand that for a very long time, we were led by elders for a very long time. So there's nothing wrong with an elder leading. But the thing is, even when we were living in monarchy times, or chieftains or whatever you want to call it.
Mm.
Every chief or king or queen, they had their protege they were mentoring in the process.
Mm.
Because the last thing you want to do is deal with a power vacuum when you're out of that position.
Yeah, there's a transitional phase.
Exactly. You want to have a smooth transition. The biggest problem with a lot of Africans, with a lot of African leadership structure is that they stay in power for a very long time without having any transitional procedures in place, to the point where when they leave, you have a Zimbabwe and Mugabe situation.
Mm. Now people have to understand growing. No, you have Angola and...
Angola and Dos Santos situation. Santos. Exactly. Now you keep
where
having
the,
things
where
like
the
that.
Where the son transfers money from the central bank to a personal bank account in Portugal. Where the daughter now is being hounded by, was it Interpol?
Yeah, both Interpol and the state security agencies.
Yeah, for money that was placed away.
So private funds being, or public funds being privatized.
Yeah, being privatized. So now we sit with a scenario here on this African continent with this particular, with that perspective of the open border discussions that some opposition parties who want to become heads of state in their respective countries calling for the open borders situation, who at the same time have the dilemma, I call it the dilemma because it throws them on the other side of the fence about the protection of indigenous rights in their respective African countries. Now they want to deal with other statesmen who were former generals, military generals.
Economically,
who have the hotline to their own armies just like this, by just going, hello, 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 yeah. Borders are being about to be opened. Let's try and go and colonize that African country.
Just a quick question. How are you going to negotiate that with the Rapid Support Force, for example? Well, we are going for an election. You guys just put your guns down. The person that won the elections is a Namibian. And from now on...
You must answer to him.
You must answer to him.
How are we going to answer the question of all those Congolese that have been fighting for the past 25 years, no? 30 years in that East DRC, West Rwanda zone. How are we going to deal with such guys who don't know what peace is, who don't know what living in peace is, who doesn't understand that the moment that guns and violence, that's not how you settle disputes. You need to, talk to people, negotiate every day.
Look, if there's a fantasy land where we can pull that off, I'm willing to live in that land. But the thing is,
An ulterior dimension. There's a parallel dimension. Yeah.
Because first of all,
alternate, not ulterior, alternate.
Dimension. Alternate and alternate universe. Yeah.
Yeah.
First of all, we had so many warlords running around, trigger happy around this continent. We didn't have a solution for it. What did we do?
We allowed some of them to become presidents, South Sudan.
Big time. Then we decided, ICC, please come and help us on this one. And then, we basically,
Our own president stood up and said the ICC is hounding just us Africans.
Thank you.
And what does that look like to us? Oh, so you want the thing, but you're unhappy with the thing. Hello?
You have problems you can't solve.
You turn for external help, we try to help, and then you complain.
Look, first of all, Africa is a beautiful continent. Africans are like a family. They are good, for a short period of time together.
Oh, you must watch out. Don't say that you're a Namibian. People will fall in love with
you. That's just my observation on family members.
If you cross this border here, northwards,
not
Angola, here, Zambia, Zimbabwe, heading that way. And you say I'm Namibian.
I've been there, fall in love with you. This close. Now,
this close to becoming married.
Getting lucky. Now, look, the thing is...
my goodness.
The thing is, it's a very beautiful picture to draw. For me, the whole idea of breaking down borders and uniting Africa sounds not very different from trickle-down economy.
Mm.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense on paper. But the practical application of that, factoring in human flaws, human inherent flaws.
Mm.
I don't think we can pull that off. Because again, one thing, power, that will be the biggest downfall. Who is going to be the president?
Exactly.
I mean, we have seen how elections end. Most of them goes bloody because everyone wants to be the president of a fraction of a continent. Now, imagine the effort they will put in the fighting if the power means controlling the whole continent. And then you have the whole religious aspect. Then the northern part of Africa is predominantly Islam. The southern part of it, the central part of it, it's somewhat of a melting pot between Islam and Christianity, and then it becomes more Christian the further south you go.
Mm.
Now, all these guys just have issues of their own. Like, for some reason, Each one of us thinks my God is better than yours. That's another biggest problem that you'll have to deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then now you have to pick an official language. Didn't that become a big deal? You know, one of those more like main divisions in the Pan-African Parliament. You have Anglophones and Francophones on one side. Each one of them basically feel like they are better than the others. The list is endless. So, which is why when it comes to that, my point of view have always been: unite politically, leave me out of that. Unite economically, as in the way that we are doing with the Africa continental free trade area. That, yeah. Now we are talking. The thing is, uniting politically raises a lot of questions. The EU will tell you that. They have their own. Now the thing is, it's very easy to look at Europe on a map and go like, well, they're all white, so they all get along anyway. Mm. No, they don't.
Oh no, the guys here, they were former Yugoslavia, like Serbia.
They have their own historical touchy subject.
Serbia still has issues because of the bombing that they experienced.
Belgrade.
Yeah, or during the 90s, after the Rwanda genocide. Serbia still has issues with NATO. And that was a NATO thing channeled through the European Union. They had an issue they still have an issue with NATO about that. NATO and Europe, Western Europe, about that.
Yeah, the Chinese also have an issue with that.
Yeah, the Chinese one was in 1998 or 1999.
The embassy was blown up.
Yeah. And even though the Americans apparently apologized back then, the Chinese are still saying, nah, my bro. If you are saying that you have sophisticated technology, but you hit us out of the whole city, you hit us. And it's not one, it's two. It's two missiles that struck them. I would have also said, nah. I would have also said, nah, brah. Nah, you can't be that off. Your technology can't be that whack.
Okay, it's either you are terrible at aiming, or it's still under development. Now, if it's still under development, then why did you roll it out?
It's either you are terrible at lying.
Yeah, that too.
That is the aim. It's either you are terrible at lying and not saying why you want to hit us, or why did you hit us, or you are terrible in your manufacturing process, or you just bought faulty equipment.
No, I totally understand why the Chinese didn't buy that, because if you look at I think those two were engaged in multiple proxy wars all over Asia.
It's also a scenario, Hamoud. Well, it started obviously in the Korean War, but it's also the discussion based upon the, what was the other thing that has now popped up recently, since, you know, BRICS is now becoming this major talking point even. Is the EU Commission's Maria Callas? Maria Callas is the opera singer. I think her name is Callas. Or Kaya Callas, yeah, Kaya Callas. Where she was asking remember that Ursula von der Leyen earlier this year went to China with a delegation.
That was dramatic. Hard to forget.
So when they get there, now, Kaya Callas is busy. Yeah, she's on the foreign relations side of the EU Commission. Now, Kaya Callas was now trying to understand, you know, what's with all this thing that China is now talking about, their impact and their contributions in the Second World War. And it's the same thing that the Russians are also doing. The Russians now every year have Victory Day.
Yeah, they do.
And the Chinese have another day. They celebrate another, but it's like, literally like a month, I think, apart from each other. It's always in their summer periods, meaning in the middle of the year when we have winter. So, Kaya Callas was trying to understand, what's with this new narrative now that the Chinese and the Russians are saying their contributions to the Second World War effort in stopping fascism and, you know, in the global fight towards, you know, ensuring that there's not a singular or unipolar order, but that, you know, it shows the strength in the multipolar order of things. And the point makes sense from the point that she's obviously trying to counter. She's trying to counter a point in terms of understanding, what's this history now of Russia and China? Well, unfortunately, the historians from the West constantly keep correcting the politicians of the day by telling them the Russians lost the most people in the war against the Germans. Yeah. The Chinese lost the most people, just like the Russians, on the Eastern Front against the Japanese. And you have to look at China's particular contribution since the 30s when the Japanese invaded them.
Yeah.
Remember that the Japanese invaded them, and the Japanese didn't care. They just killed people.
No, the Japanese were brutal.
They just started, they walk in, you are still smiling and asking, hey, why are you guys walking here? They just start shooting.
Manchuria.
Yeah, not just Manchuria. When they took Singapore, when they took all those here, Southeast Asia territories from the British.
But what is wrong with us, though? By us, I mean a species. But because when it comes to war, boy, are we good at that.
Well, you have to look at how much, what were the motivations of war first, the you know, the instances of war behind the examples we've got. It was all about resources and land.
So we're basically like a bunch of kindergarten kids fighting over a peanut butter sandwich at the playground. Yeah.
But you already had your sandwich.
Yeah.
But you want that kid's sandwich.
Yeah, you have yours in the bag and you want that kid's sandwich. That's basically us. So we never grow up, do we?
Yeah, but you already ate yours as well.
Uh-huh. You want more of it.
You want more of it. And you're now looking at other people.
And you're not asking.
No. You're just, firstly, you like hinting. Can you give me a piece? And if the person says no, then it starts with a fight. But if the person gives you like the one piece, then you go like, okay, maybe
I need more.
Maybe I can build closer relations. And now the kid wants to eat the other piece, and you say, okay, now can I also have that piece? I already finished this piece. And then another fight breaks out.
It's all resource-based.
So it is based upon the resources. And it was based upon the resources.
In other words, we are terrible at sharing.
We are.
Back to my point, selfish.
Yes, you're right. Coming back to the other particular point in terms of what this report also tries to highlight has been the other talking point, Helmut, that we've technically ignored for a long time.
What's that?
How do you position your economy? Is your economy positioned to serving the purpose of a sector? Or is your economy positioned to serving the society? Now, when you've got a society-oriented economy, you get things like investments in reliable public transport. You get things in the aspect of Windhoek does not have to be the fifth biggest in surface area city on Africa, or the second biggest on Africa, or the, yeah, it's in the top five most in terms of surface area, but actually that there was adequate, sophisticated planning applied to how Windhoek should grow. Meaning, you go and invest, Helmut, you know that the land, and you can just do any experiment wherever you are, dear listener. You just go look at the kind of soil that Windhoek has, the kind of land, the soil structure. In some places, Helmut, you literally need a jackhammer. You sometimes even need a literal heavy earth moving excavator. An excavator just to dig a foundation. In other parts, it's wonderful soil. But then the composition of the neighborhood is not one that actually installs any sort of safety mechanism into you, because you don't trust your landlord, you don't trust your neighbor, you have 5,000 gates and locks, and yeah, and you know you don't want to walk around at night past 8 o'clock at night, because then all the juveniles and all the delinquents come out on the street and they're like, hello, boza, give us $5, and you're like, if I say yes and if I stop, I know. Yeah. They're like five of them.
Uh-huh.
And they're definitely going to start with, give me the shoes, give me the sock, give me...
never stop asking.
Yeah. Everything, it'll just go like that. And you'll end up walking naked back home.
Uh-huh. Walking? You're not walking.
I'm trying to put, you know, a little bit of
You are Frank Frederick-ing your way home.
I'm making it look as community friendly as possible, okay. Elmwood. Obviously, you and I know what that name of that department is. The asset forfeiture department, guys. And it's usually those guys that come out when you think, oh, it's a lovely Thursday night, you know, in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
But I know I can't go and walk around at 8 o'clock at night, because you know what? The asset forfeitures are all roaming around. So when you look at that community-based setting, I know, places like Karatura and Kommersdal, they were at a position where they espoused the same feeling as this report. You know, people could rely on each other. They could borrow things from each other. Yeah. They could help each other. There was a sense of community.
Yeah.
But as is with any urban settlement around the world, when you have the notion of being able to buy and to sell land, you will always get new people coming in. You will always get new families coming in, new households. And so the profile of the community continues to change, Helmut. Helmut, you won't live forever in the same spot.
Mm.
I won't live forever in the same spot.
I don't want to.
So many times I've had people that I know that say, you know what? I'm looking for another opportunity. I'm moving to the coast. Then they sell their house, their land, their whatever here in Windhoek. They sell that asset. They move and they buy an asset and they invest in another authority at the coast. Now, at the heart of that discussion, it shows actually how advanced your basic economic level is, that you can move, you can acquire and dispose of immovable property in a safe manner. What is portrayed, for example, in that foreword signed by those two officials for the Sierra Leone and Liberia borderlands communities, displays or illustrates to me insecurity. First and foremost, Helmut, they're living on the borderlands. You come to Namibia, borderlands occupation, you sometimes know, depending on where you find yourself.
Yeah.
The border guards would say, hey, Helmut, how are you doing, man? Nice seeing you again this morning. And you go like, yeah, how are you doing, Dwight? Everything is cool, Jazz. But if it's on another part of the border, people get shot at of the Namibian border.
Yeah.
People have lost lives. And another part of the border, you've got family on that side of the river. I cannot cross the river without a passport.
Yeah.
Even if I can say that, yeah, my dad is from that area, we don't care. Show us the passport. I'm talking about South Africa, our relationship with South Africa,
yeah.
And the protocol observed for 4 pages discussion last year.
Oh, yeah, that is.
That didn't.
Orange River discussion.
Nothing came from that talk. And we literally have the same settings in Namibia with all our neighbors vis-a-vis to the templates that were borrowed from across the African continent. Now, we can still try and get back to that community, society-focused economic planning.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing, Albert. When you even go and read NDP 6, NDP 6 still gives you an air, vibes, a flavor of look to the sector first to solve the societal issue. Huh? Huh?
Yeah.
Earlier this week, and we still have to talk about the subject, né? But just to zone in for you, there were six students, two university students,
mm-hmm.
or three of them, I think, and four primary school learners. So six people from an educational perspective
mm-hmm.
were at the Space Science Week discussion that I attended on Monday
yeah.
that we still have to talk about. Now, that the talking points that were emanating from there, and I can always share, you know, the speeches and the insights and the recordings that I've got, is that people were talking about Namibia must reach for the stars. So that means Namibia must reach for a sector, develop the policy for a sector, do this for a sector, do that for a sector, empower this university, empower that university, empower this entity, empower that SOE. And remember, everything I'm mentioning to you speaks to sector orientation. Sort the sector out. Then we hope the community or the society learns or generates their benefits.
Oh, dear.
Which is the basic flaw in our economic planning. Because we're not doing this.
I think that brings us back to our impracticality, if I can say that, of the trickle-down economy idea. you know, okay, on who to prioritize, or who to, on who to prioritize between the people and different sectors.
Mm.
That part is, I'm looking at it from, I'm looking at it from an, from an angle of, you know, my seesaw example again, trying to balance the two.
Yeah.
And that's primarily because of the, who is that gentleman that say that, every time that he's approached by a lot of innovative business, you know, of Namibians with their innovative business ideas, he first asks them, do you want to make profit?
Oh, the economist from, Cirrus Capital, Mr. Roland Brown.
Yeah, because, you know, the sectors want to, you know, want to get into almost like start business models that are reliable. The, you know, one that can run for a, you know, for a long period of time. You don't want to start a business today and then shut down tomorrow and then send everyone packing. Everyone that, you know, despite the employment you have already provided, and now you just have to close everything because you didn't think everything through. Yeah. So, all these sectors, you know, prioritizing them is not a inherently a bad idea. It's just that for them to be, you know, for them to be, to keep providing the service and, you know, both directly and indirectly by that directly, the service that they're producing or more like, the products that they're producing, the service that they are dispensing and indirectly in terms of employment creation and all those things. There are a lot of benefits that they offer to the community.
Yeah.
Now, all these benefits must be, you know, must be structured in a way that they are sustainable over a long period of time, because you don't want, shops opening and closing, or facilities, you know, opening and closing, you know. Pressure. Now, the thing is that that helps you look at it from an angle of it's not inherently bad to, you know, to focus on them. The problem is we are giving all the attention on them to the point where we're not now turning around and saying, okay, now it's set up, now it's reliable, everything is running and well oiled. Now, how do we transfer it for the benefits from the sector to the people?
But what does the sector want? Now the sector tells you, Helmut, oh, Helmut and Dwight, you must both have passed grade 12. You must have achieved basic minimum higher education level of 3 years or a 3-year bachelor program. But it shouldn't be any bachelor. We want you in a specific targeted program. So now we want you all learning robotic mechanics. And Dwight scratches his head and goes like, but I'm good with business-oriented, you know, degrees and stuff like knowledge like that. I'm not math strong. Oh, well, sorry, you know, just fall out. Now you look at what that sector proposes or transmits every time. Now, to me, Helmut, it looks like, what do they call that thing? Being safe. You know, the compliance discussion. No, we are safe as long as you just meet the standards. Okay, how do I meet the standards? Okay, the standards imply that you need this and this and this. And then you go and look at the actual cost. Oh, I need to pay $300,000 for this degree. Oh, I need to pay $1 million to do this and to do that and to do this and to do that. And I kid you not, Helmut, the only sector that exists from the society, literally that thrives from the society, is the food retail, the agricultural sector, the other retail parts of the retail sector, and the, let's for example say, the arts and culture sector.
Yeah.
They are the only sectors that thrive on a society that has adequate access to enough resources and opportunities. Let me give you an example, a classic example, an example I will never forget that my two older brothers mentioned to me. And this is in the particular time I'm talking about now. I'm referencing the 80s, in the 1980s, when Dwight's brain cells were still developing. You know? So there was a guy, local business person in Rehoboth that my two older brothers knew, because his shop was not far from my grandmother's house.
Yeah.
So this is a period just obviously after my granddad's passing and all that. So my two elder brothers once spoke about, because they knew the two guys that my one brother played rugby with these other two brothers in the club, that one of the clubs that come from Rehoboth. And they just, you know, automatically fell into the history of these two brothers and their mother, in terms of what the mom did to their dad, because the two brothers managed the service station with the shop, you know, the convenience shop, that from the money that the mom got from the divorce from their dad, Now, the dad was at one stage this prominent business person. I'm not mentioning names, don't worry. From this prominent business person there in the 80s, in Rehoboth. And then when he started fooling around in the marriage, obviously, as our gender does sometimes love doing, the wife decided, you know what, I'm taking you to the cleaners. Children, money, everything. And she opened up another business that actually closed down the existing business that he had. It led that man to ruin because he became a beggar in the town. Because obviously that's what the court systems did. You know, the legal system does if you are married in community. But my brothers told me there was a mechanism that he used to collect all the empty beer bottles and Coke bottles, this man. Mm. Collect them and he would go, you know, resell them. He would collect money every time from doing that action. Up to a point, Helmut, where he reopened up his own business again. The same business in the same venue. He reopened up it again.
Yeah.
Literally coming, you know, you rose, you fell, yeah, and the guy rose again.
Yeah.
Now, he's the only person I've heard of such a tale. Only my two brothers and, you know, people of their age range, you know, would know of this man's story. And they cited literally. Unfortunately, it was at the time that you could see the community could help him. And the community trusted him to go back and buy from him again.
Yeah.
They trusted him again. Now, the modern community discussion. Helmut, there's a template, there's a discussion floating around on the internet, and it's coming through from articles that are being researched. Why are bars and pubs in London or in England dying? Why is bar or pub culture dying? Now there's another one in Europe or in Germany that they're looking at. Why are nightclubs dying? Now, these two business types are things that are based upon a society.
Community.
They're based upon a community. They're based upon you rely on people going out at night. So you had certain elements in place. You see, this Ubuntu discussion doesn't apply in a Windhoek urban, Namibia's urbanization and industrialization dream. It doesn't apply.
No, it doesn't.
Because it means, Helmut, that we've got to go look at, I have to now look back at the 90s when I grew up in the 1990s in Rehoboth, that 7 years that I stayed in Rehoboth. I have to look to that neighborhood. But I was between 6 and 15 years old at that stage.
You know, one thing that, one of the main reasons why I'm agree with you when it comes to why I'm agreeing with you on the, you know, on the, on why this will, will be very difficult to implement in an urban setting is that, based on our previous, world, population statistics, there's one thing we've learned, at least in comparison to the one in 2011. The one in 2011 recorded, big, a small number of households, but the size of these households were bigger.
Yeah.
Fast forward to 2023, 2024.
We've got more households.
We have more households, but they smaller, have shrunk.
Yeah, smaller units.
Yeah. Translation. We are, firstly, are going into people, isolation.
Firstly, people know that they can't have more children.
No, they can't.
Than they had.
Because of the cost of living. So that's not on them for
the
most
part. And the cost of childbirth.
Yeah.
Look, it's nothing to get to that phase.
Right. It is something. But
no, it costs nothing.
Yeah.
If you look at the investment costs, I'm talking now about the conception phase.
Oh.
Everything around doing the conception situation.
Depending on which restaurant you're going to before that, but.
No, that's why I'm saying it depends. There's a lot of variables that add
exactly,
in
there are a lot of.
For every person's particular unique experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the actual conception thing, it costs nothing. It's just you need energy and food. I'm trying to stay as sane and as sanitized as possible.
I'm just gonna keep quiet before we get fired.
So the conception phase, only costs you energy, meaning you should have at least eaten.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. When you look at anything else from birth, not even from, you know, the adjustment in diet,
medical appointments, dude,
that the woman has to go
through. That's before birth.
Okay, yeah, medical appointments as well, but the medical appointments factor them in as like a, as like a, you can, you've got two options already.
Yeah.
Either you've got medical aid for private sector, or you can access the you know, the maternal facilities
at the trimester.
Yeah. So it depends which access point.
Yeah.
So you can take that thing away because it's based upon preference.
Yeah.
But start from childbirth. Just start from childbirth, Helmut. If you've got someone like my younger brother that had to pay 30 grand up front. 30 grand up front.
For what?
For his son to be born. And for him to be, to him not having to drive home, but to be close to his wife when she has to, you know, give birth. He had to pay that up front. Okay, firstly, apparently the private hospital does not trust CMS. That's what he was told. So the situation made it peculiar, obviously, for any government worker when you're trying to start a family and you don't trust, you know, your own services. These are the sentiments of government workers, Amut. This is not the sentiments of Dwight Links. It's the sentiments of government workers. And even though the government is actively trying to improve on the sentiment side of things, but this is the setting. This is the situation.
But don't worry. We are going to work this out according to our health minister
year.
Come April 2026.
Yeah.
You know, we want to, you know, to revamp to the state of the art level of service provision, the public health sector, to the point where public, you know, public officials can go to them for medical assistance.
Yeah. And it's the same comment that,
ain't no way that's happening. That's for sure.
It's the same comment that the Director General of the National Planning Commission, that being, Director General, Mbwende, mentioned also at NAST, 2 months back by saying they are now they're working on mechanisms now where they are literally, it's like an embargo. They're embargoing government officials from having to pay for private sector functions. But here's the thing, Helmut. The private sector guys will tell you if you want to solve your cancer or you want cancer treatment and stuff like that. They'll all tell you, go here, go there, go there.
Now, before you start embargoing people, assuming that's the right word, how is the service going? Now,
basics.
Lawmaking in Dwight's example exists, take longer.
Dwight's example exists of the tooth. And remember our former colleague? Who lost a healthy tooth that is right next to the aching tooth? Not tooth, a tooth.
Imagine that happening to Madam Speaker. The point is, you know, this working out is a serious challenge if that, you know, that requires you to,
you
having
mentioned the name
to improve. I did not.
you know,
one that requires you to look at the services first. And, I'm not one to, now, I don't really like pointing all the fingers to people that are working in the public sector now, because my point of view is that, they're just dealing with very large volumes to the point where it's overwhelming.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's not a nurse's fault. They are not seeing you on time. They're just looking at a very long queue. So now that obviously is going to slow down the service. Now, the thing is, you can basically make it, you can tell people that, okay, now, for the only service you are allowed to use is this, but how is that service doing? It's like saying, okay, now, no one is allowed to use a cab anymore. You should all take buses. Are they enough?
No.
How efficient?
Saying, no one must buy a car anymore.
Yeah.
You must now all ride buses. From City of Windhoek.
How many of them do you have?
And
can they cut off the population that you're looking at?
And you limit the issuance of like these technologies, ride-hailing technologies like Yango.
Yeah.
Now you're telling everyone you must do that. Now, you're literally cutting off an economy.
Yeah.
And telling that economy, we don't want to give you money. But the economy is dispensing a service continuously to the people that you employ. Which it doesn't sound thought out. To me, it doesn't sound thought out because it's an embargo. It's an internalized industry embargo. It doesn't make sense. Oh, you have to ask that question, yes. Just ask that question. But
okay. Look,
from the society side of things, the unfortunate thing is what I continuously see is that if you take the health sector aside, we do need reformation in our transport sector, Helmut. We do need reformation, obviously, in terms of the access to opportunities side of things. I am a great proponent for my two obvious loves, and I love them. You operate in one of them, arts and culture and sport.
Yeah.
They are the quickest by which you can achieve the necessary particular societal transformation you want. But they come with investments.
Lots of it.
Not investments from the state. Government officials, don't worry. Today, Dwight is not on your case about having you guys spending money. There are other people that need convincing of the product. And there are other people that are sitting in power in the necessary positions who don't see the picture. And what, they don't see the picture. They don't see the picture. And when we get to our netball discussion, which might either be tomorrow or next week, I'll have to repeat the picture. Because even then, the conversation that comes through in that subject is limited.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, Helmut. The unfortunate thing when it comes to arts, culture, sport, theater, drama, TV, movies, music, which is obviously everything arts and culture.
Yeah.
Is that you need to generate markets. You're generating a market. You're generating a market.
How do you do that on a society level?
Well, how you first have to start out in a society level is that many of these products are born from the society.
Yeah.
You have your local artists. There's a guy, one of my siblings knows back in Rehoboth. It was a guy that failed because of various particular negative impacts that crossed his life. But he's a very good crafter. He makes very good wooden crafts, you know. Mm. He sculpts them and he makes them himself. And all that he was told one day was go out and go and create a market. Because he was trying to tell my sibling, I need the state to do this. And all that was told him, hey, you're already making the product. Take that thing. And go and see if someone in your town can buy it from you.
Yeah.
Don't ask the government from Windhoek to try and do something for you in Rehoboth. Or the government from Windhoek to do something for you in Gobabis. Go and see, what are you doing with your hands? So he took his 7 crafts, walked to the closest, you know, kind of a shop situation, curio, it was a curio shop.
Mm.
There's one there in Rehoboth. And he just asked the owner, hey, would you be interested in probably looking at what I'm making and then can we start, you know, probably seeing if I can become a supplier? She bought all 7 right there on the spot for the guy. She bought all 7 from a local producer on the spot. There is market for arts, crafts. There is a market, Helmut.
You know,
there's a market for stand-up comedy.
That's one thing I like about basically how the private sector, for the most part, operates. What they're looking at is the product that you are offering. Is there someone that's willing to buy it?
Exactly.
Yeah, because if there's someone that's willing to buy it, then that's a good return on investment. It's just simple business discussion, nothing personal. So in other words, even if I had all the billions of dollars and you had all this brilliant business idea that, that can be equated to Peugeot, mm-hmm. I'm not investing it. Why? Because you did not answer the question of who is buying that product.
Who's buying it? And did you make a prototype? Do you know what? Do you know how modern business, how businesses work? Many of the car manufacturing ideas were based on a bunch of guys that had engineering backgrounds who built a prototype. Bill Gates them built a prototype. They build prototypes of the thing.
Yeah.
And then they go show people, this is what we made. This is our idea. We'd like you to invest in the idea. Now, until Namibians stop thinking about a business, I'm going to say it the other word, a business plan. I'm sorry, I'm slightly emotional. Stop thinking about a business plan. And even the banks, stop thinking about business plans. People have to think about prototype. Show me a prototype. people buy into a prototype. People will tell you, how many can you make? What's your level of production? Mm-hmm. How long does it take for you to produce X amount, X quantity, X size? Straightforward stuff, Helmut. You've gone through those questions in your stand-up comedy, ne? People asking you, how long does it take you, Helmut, to think about the topic? How long do you think you can prepare adequately, Helmut? Where do you want to deliver? How long do you think you can carry this joke or this content or the subject matter for? All those things. Are you nervous? Do you cater for all kinds of groups? Or do you have a specific kind of a crowd?
Specific, demographic,
Straightforward questions. Completely scientific, but to the point, actual business creating, generating scenarios. Ad break, guys.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste. That gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. Sometimes you have to raise a Vindhuk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vindhuk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vindhuk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. We continue, but before we do, let's take a live read.
Namibia, are you ready to win big? Coca-Cola is giving away up to 1 million Namibian dollars in prizes. Every week, one lucky winner walks away with $10,000 cash. All you have to do is grab your favorite Coke, Fanta, Sprite, Stoney, or Twist in 2 liters, 1.25 liters, or 600 ml bottles. Look under the yellow cap, dial *142*45845 hashtag, punch in your code, follow the prompts to enter, and just like that, you could be our next big winner. Refresh, enjoy, and win with Coca-Cola. T's and C's apply. Go to the Coca-Cola social media pages to watch the video on how to enter the competition. Vavitcha University, where the 2026 applications are now open for the Faculty of Law, Commerce, and Education. Programs on offer are the Diploma in Legal Studies, Level 6, Bachelor of Laws Honors, Bachelor of Science in Project Management Honors, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honors, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honors, Math and Science for grades 4 to 7, and Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education and Honors, Math and Science for the grades 8 to 12. Application fee is 230 Namibian dollars. Application deadline is from 30 November 2025. How to apply? Applications can be done online on our website at www.wuu.edu.na. The application fee for all courses is 230 Namibian dollars. Payments can be done at the bank, electronic fund transfers, meaning EFTs, or swiping at our campuses. The proof of payment must be uploaded on the application form along with all other relevant documents. No ATM deposit receipts, proof of payment, will be accepted. All foreign qualifications must be accompanied by the NQA evaluation report or certificate. For more information, please call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Vavitcha University, where everyone is an achiever.
We have 12 minutes to go, and I have a bunch of questions, but I'm just gonna, I'm just gonna, focus on one. Like, the role that society has to play, the reason why this is a society, society oriented, approach is, it points to, to the fact that society, itself on a, on an individual level must participate into the, into this approach in a way that it tries to solve all the economic, political or safety and security issues. Now, this is where I look at the urban area, urban areas and go, this is either not going to work or is going to take forever to implement. A lot of things will have to change. And the reason behind is, again, back to, you know, I will still maintain we're very selfish. Mm. Dwight, if I was walking around today and I lose a cell phone because it got grabbed, mm. I'd be super pissed. But the next year when someone approaches me with a really cheap grabbed phone, mm. I'm not asking questions.
Which might be your old phone.
Exactly. So in other words, when we lose something, we start screaming to the top of our lungs. But when we are sold something at a heavily discounted price, we know this thing is stolen because it's not coming with proof of ownership. We're willing to buy.
One other setting is obviously also, Helmut, that they keep speaking in the report about things like community capital and social capital, non-state social protection in the contemporary Africa. You know, these kinds of conversations looking at like a... But they're looking at a... It's like a viewing from above mm-hmm. picture, you know, the formations. I'd say in a modern-day Namibian context, we have various presentations of what a local authority is supposed to represent for each urban setting mm-hmm. in the country. You see, when you and I did the Kavango West regional discussion, state of the region address, where the governor, Ferna Sinimbo, cited that they need more urban settlements to be classified in the region, because she literally echoed what you and I had been talking about, the burden that's placed on Nkurunkuru.
Yeah.
Because Nkurunkuru has to serve 123,000 people. But there's only 10,000 people that live in, or 11,000 people that live in Nkurunkuru. And the other 110,000 people are outside somewhere, there in the bush somewhere. Ne?
Yeah.
Alongside the guy with his broccoli.
Now that guy's my hero, man.
So when you look at that,
2 years.
Yeah. Well, the 3 years was the most rehabilitation.
Years. No, the fact that he pulled off the rehabilitation, which is why I'm saying, if a homeboy writes a book, I'm buying it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he has his punchline must be at the start. He has to write his book from back to front.
Yeah.
About he tried to sell broccoli to people, and people were like, "What are you selling me?" Okay, I'll take the leaves of the thing, and it's like, "What?
What about the bulb?" Not really.
No, we don't want the bulb. We don't know what this thing is even.
First, let alone how to prepare it.
Yeah. So when you look at a picture like that, it obviously means, you know, one region doesn't have the same needs as the next region.
Yeah.
When you come to a region like Ochozonjupa, which is big, it's the second biggest, most after Karas. Karas and Hartapa. Karas, Hartapa, Rongo are, because they're sparsely populated.
Yeah.
And they've got a lot of, you know, obviously commercial farmland in between. But when you look at them, they also have small settlements, which are rural settlements, but not a position close to any urban settlement.
Yeah.
So now they have unique needs there, because do you ask the question, must I now go position a potential local authority? Do they fall under a local authority? Are they part of a local authority? How do they find themselves? You sometimes see when it comes to these constituency elections, like at the end of this year, there's a Ochivarongo rural. You go like, where's Ochivarongo rural? And then you hear it's potentially like Omitara. It's just an example. I know, guys. Anyone from Ochozonjupa, I'm just making an example. Just making an example, please. And then you hear it's Omitara. Or it's literally where people that basic income grant discussion, that we focused on.
Yeah.
And it's potentially the people that live in Omitara. And then there's Ochivarongo urban. And then it's the whole town. But you can dissect the town even further into constituencies potentially. Then you sit with this discussion of, okay, so let's really look at things in the earnest in terms of the development path that we're taking region by region. Meaning you take each region's needs and you evaluate the needs of the region. Now, here's the discussion, Helmut. Now you've got people living in Omitara. Where do they derive services from? And they actually, you know, when that basic income grant mechanism was piloted and experimented on them, they saw great benefit, because firstly, it initiated local business enterprises. In many cases, it was predominantly various kinds of small businesses that were initiated. Children could go back to school. Children were no longer hungry. People had extra money between them. People had extra capital to deal and then try and do things and start small enterprises. The burden here is, if you take away a burden, many of the people in many parts of the country will have the opportunity to start something that then builds from that positive of you taking a burden away. I take you to another example. The planned port meant for Kunene. Do you know of that discussion, Elmo?
Seaport?
They're in the pipeline, in Namibia's development plan, not part of NDP6, but overall plan, is that there should be a port on the Kunene coastline. The Kunene region coastline. Yeah. The port's name or the project's name is Cape Fria. If you go Google search Cape Fria, guys, you'll not find much. You'll find obscure articles. I call them obscure because I don't rely on the resource. I don't trust the platforms. They tried something. In most cases, they look like blogging entries, or a social media post just that recently came out earlier this year. And it just doesn't look convincing enough. But Cape Fria has been an old project, even by the South Africans, since the 70s. That even the modern day Namibian government is trying to resuscitate in some form, or trying to find ways in some, hey, let's make an announcement, but we don't start rolling the ball anywhere. So Cape Fria once again came into the presentation realm. In 2022, when this whole discussion of green hydrogen started rolling. And then I was shown a map. The first green hydrogen conference that popped off, it was a country club in 2022. I was shown a map, all of us there in that hall, we were shown a map, and I saw three circles on the coastline of Namibia. A circle in Oludrits, where the main project starts from.
Yeah.
The circle at Valfa Swakopmundentis Bay, which is the one with the Belgian king came to, shake hands with.
The official.
And then there's the third circle in Kunene. Now, I know my geography of my country. I know where Kunene and Erongo meet. And that was predominantly Kunene.
That's Kunene.
That was Kunene where that circle was. That wasn't at Tora Bay on the other side of Hentis, which is a couple of hundred kilometers on the coastline, in a protected area of the skeleton coast. No. That was on the other side of the border, regional border, in Kunene. And last year when I interviewed our Kunene correspondent, Kambaikwa, here for the business and economic segment on air, and I asked him what were the developments and the talking points and the stuff in Kunene, and he also cited, and I asked him about that question, also about the planned port facility for Kunene, Cape Fria. Now, if you take Kunene's, for example, Kunene's needs, somewhere in Windhoek, policymakers and planners and government officials have a plan for Kunene. Kunene on the ground will tell you a completely different needs analysis. So here, you've got people in Windhoek thinking up a grand scheme for Kunene.
And
people on the ground in Kunene will tell you, but hey, guys, we need to solve these immediate issues for us. There's the other thing of Kunene. It's also rich in natural resources.
Yeah.
If you do a basic Google search about mineral deposits in Namibia, just a Google search, you just ask, are there any planned mining activities per region? You just take per region. There's a planned mining activity on the other side of Opuo. There's an iron ore deposit.
Oh, yeah, iron is one of those things we have in abundance.
It's like literally like a driving distance just outside of Opuo. But you're heading into Kunene. You're not heading into... What's the border that Kunene borders onto? If you can drive... One of the old regions, man. Is it Oshana?
Unless,
is it Osh... No, it's not Oshikoto.
Unless I'm looking at the map. Those things drive me bananas.
But the deposit isn't this way, you know, heading eastwards. It's westwards, heading into the rest of the region, outside of Opuo. You're going into Opuo.
Yeah.
Aye, you're going outside of Opuo, but into a rural area just outside of the town. When you look at scenarios like that, and the discussion last year where the German envoy for natural resources.
Why pay more when you can pay less at USAID? Dawn Roll-On deodorant for ladies and men, just $13.99 Namibian dollars. 400 milliliters of Sungel dishwashing liquid, just $16.99 Namibian dollars. 1 kilogram of Sunlight 5-in-1 hand washing powder, just $29.99 Namibian dollars. 500 milliliter tube of Personal Touch fabric softener, just $24.99 Namibian dollars. And 400 milliliters of Dawn hand and body cream, just $29.99 Namibian dollars. You save, I save, we all save at USAID.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshuana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kondado inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Pata Fanona, Monica Ko, Eagle FM, Honora Tatuime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Matatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, the I.
Welcome back. It's just a minute past the hour of business and economic segment. Time to, you know, wrap it up. So, continue with your point before I chime in with my final words for the day.
So, Helmut, when we have to look at the needs discussion across the country, just in Namibia itself, you would discover that you would find varying degrees. Now, obviously, NDB6 shows up with this is our blanket envelope umbrella-ish response to the needs in the country. But it now falls upon, and this is probably where many people get annoyed with their localized politicians in their respective regions and towns across the country, is that too much emphasis is given to the boardroom politics of the local authorities.
Yeah.
Instead of hoping that local procurement or localized procurement or local authority procurement is empowered. That there's, you know, corrective actions or, you know, you put systems and mechanisms in place. Do you know how lovely it would have been, Helmut, if the dispensation of justice talk we had last year based upon the Oshikati Door standing committee engagement with judiciary and Ministry of Justice in its own right, it would have illustrated to the regions that one of the single most important infrastructure mechanisms or service provision mechanisms in Namibia is being strengthened. You're seeing homes being built for these legal offices, these magistrate buildings or courtroom buildings being constructed, and officials are hired and placed in those communities. So first and foremost, that shows the state investing in the local authority. The second scenario would have then have meant that there would be a trust element that people have, because then they know there's a police station, there's a courtroom, there's a clinic, there are people spending money that earn money from those installations in the town. They're not driving with that money out of Windhoek or out of Rehoboth or out of Okahania to the next town. They're spending it here because you see it's a tangible thing that you see. You then go on from what can then be built from there. Now the local authority of that town now has its own officials that it pays salaries to every month. Those the guys then help to ensure roads are scraped or roads are tarred, services are connected, services are dispensed, and it helps to build a conducive environment from that. Now, if a government official, like our talk of yesterday of the government strategy, comes and tells me, this is our strategy up to 2030. And I am telling, and you and I know, there are towns in Namibia where they say, hey, bruh, sometimes, you know, the bedside manners of the nurse or the doctor or the police officer, it's not the best manners. These Windhoek guys are detached from the guys in the other parts of the region.
So it's like having rich friends that are complaining about their problems and you're listening to
them. Verstandje!
I'm angry because my mom bought for me a car. I'm like, huh? No, yeah. It was the wrong color. Wait, that's what you kept?
No, I didn't want a car, you know. I want to blend in with you guys. And you look at the guy like, bruh. You want to blend in where? Where do you want to blend in?
In poverty.
Where do you want to blend in? In the 2x2 club. Huh? You want to blend in with a golf 2 club, huh?
Also wants to drive, you know, to keep driving a Toos Yota.
A what?
A Toos Yota.
Yeah.
What is a Toos Yota?
No, we have Toos. You don't have a car, so.
Oh, Toos Yota.
Oh, my goodness.
That's the worst joke I've
ever. No.
Toos Yota.
Plural. We really have to go.
You know, if the founder of Toyota heard that name there. And you would have gone like, what joke is this guy making with my family name?
Oh, yeah, it's a family name. I keep forgetting that. Yeah, it's a family name.
Yeah. So, yeah, so on that note, dear listeners, let's see each other again, same time, same place. Obviously, it's always a blast here with you guys here on Eagle FM, here on your number one talk radio station. From my side, we'll see each other again, same time, same place. Helmut?
Yep. Till tomorrow, same time, same place. Stay tuned for a business and economic segment with David.